Welcome to the HCI family of podcasts. We're your source for personal, professional, and organizational growth and development. We share our own original research, explore industry trends, and interview executives and thought leaders from across the globe. Join us for practitioner-oriented content around all things leadership, HR, talent management, organizational development, and change management. Maximize your personal and organizational potential with the HCI family of podcasts. Carson Finkel, welcome to the conversation today.
Hey, happy to be here.
It is a pleasure to be with you. You're joining us from Southern California. I'm south of Salt Lake City in Utah. And today we're going to be talking about improving employee mental health. I think in this day and age, there's a heightened level of awareness around this topic, this issue, which I think is great. However, I'm not sure we're always talking about it in the best, most positive, healthy ways. You know, sometimes we're very quick to label people. We're very quick to jump to assumptions and conclusions. So we're going to try to unpack this and really explore what does it really mean as a leader to be supportive of my team? How can I help improve the mental health of my team in proactive ways, in positive ways? As we get started, I wanted to share Carson's bio with everybody. Carson Finkel is a successful entrepreneur who is currently the acting CEO of a fast-growing D2C hat company called 10th Street Hats and an e-commerce advisor to the Brand Growth Experts Accelerator. After experiencing entrepreneurial burnout, Carson is on a mission with a new venture to help entrepreneurs and companies improve their mental health and well-being with Create Meditation. I think that's awesome. Anything you would like to highlight by way of your background or personal context before we dive on in further?
No, I think that's a great summary. And yeah, I just feel very blessed that with Create Meditation, I get to do this because I love it. So it's a lot of fun for me.
Well, very good. Well, why don't we start with just the why behind this? Why is this something you've become passionate about? Why is it something that you're focusing on with this new venture? And in what ways are you working with companies to help improve employee mental health?
Yeah. So I'm going to wind back the clock a little bit. March 2018, I was winding down a startup and starting up a new one, and definitely had some hubris thinking, you know, invincible, didn't need a lot of sleep, you know, cold brews every morning. And actually had a severe panic attack in my sleep. It was a nightmare. I was having a nightmare that I couldn't wake up from. And when I did wake up, I popped. I was crying uncontrollably. I thought I'd lost my mind, and it really was the scariest moment of my life. And I look at it as God, the universe, source, kind of giving me a sign like, hey, you got to look inward and make a change. And I went on a pilgrimage to kind of get back to me being me, and tried everything under the sun, all forms of mindfulness, yoga, Tony Robbins conferences, therapy, worked with a shaman, and I was actually deathly afraid to go to sleep for about 8 months because the trauma happened in my sleep. So it's very personal to me, but I found a form of breath work that had a really profound impact on me, and then got trained right before COVID kicked in. And then I kind of combined a lot of the other modalities I had dabbled with my own personal journey. And I just started offering friends and family free sessions to kind of help with the stress of what was going on in the world. And those people started referring other people. Those people started referring people, and people started sending me gifts and paying me for it. I was like, wow, I have something here. And so with my kind of branding, marketing background, I wanted to create something to give back to the world and serve. And now I've guided over 1,200 sessions, worked with many a company, and yeah, I absolutely love what I get to do.
Well, that's super cool. Not that you've experienced those challenges yourself, but that you've leveraged those experiences to try to benefit and help others. I don't know, you know, everyone who's listening or watching this, if you've had a panic attack, but they are incredibly unpleasant, to say the least. And it's more than just being a little anxious, right? It's completely completely overwhelming. I've had a handful of them over the years. I have several of my children that have experienced them on a pretty regular basis, and it really can be debilitating, and it does require you to take stock of what's most important. What are you spending your limited time and resources and energy and mental bandwidth on? We tend to stretch ourselves too thin, thinking we can always take on more and more, and eventually it catches up with you. Not everyone's going to end up having a panic attack, but whether it's just various mental health challenges or just simply not being as empowered, to do more creative stuff at work because you're bogged down in the slog of, even dreading going to work every day. So I think all that's fantastic. So in your experience, what have you seen, and how are you helping organizations to better support mental health in the workplace? What have been the trends, especially since COVID?
I mean, COVID and then afterwards, I think when I talk to HR professionals, it's really burnout is always top of people's mind, like employees, working remotely and transitioning. So a lot of times I work, it's surrounding that of me coming in, kind of just educate and help, the company employees. And the sessions I do are surrounded. There's two parts. The first part is educational, and I kind of give a master class about the breath, about breathing, and how people first are like, breathing, like I know how to breathe. Like, what do you mean? It's something we do roughly 20,000 times a day, and most people are not aware of one of those breaths. And it is the fastest way to be able to change your state outside of pharmaceuticals, right? You can upregulate, you can downregulate. So it's such a powerful tool. Like you said, empowering people to know, like, hey, when you understand, you learn some tools that you can have in your toolbox that you can use on your own in your everyday life to manage your state and how you're feeling. And I like how you said, like, when you're not your best self, like having those tools to be your best self, show up for work and your friends. So the first part is educational, and then the second part is experiential, where I take people through this kind of transformative breath work session where people get to really feel the power of the breath. And yeah, that's kind of how it works.
Very good. So, and I found that too. Like, one of the simplest things that you can do consistently is breath work. I mean, you can take more extended periods of time to practice meditation and breath work, for 10, 15, 30 minutes. But you can also, I mean, simply doing some basic breath work in between meetings. So you're going from that one stressful meeting to the next stressful meeting. You got like 1 minute. What do you do to mentally reset, to just calm yourself and get in the right headspace? Taking some time to do some deep breath work, even for just 30 seconds, can make a big difference in terms of your level of stress and anxiety and how you're approaching that moment that you're going to be in. Whether you're more inclined to go into fight or flight mode, or if you're going to be able to respond in a however whatever way you've been preparing. So all of that's fantastic.
Yeah, no, I love what you just said there, because that's a lot of what I frame it for people to show, kind of making sure that, hey, you're gonna get something out of this, because you're gonna be able to use this before meeting and between meetings. And you said all it takes, I give people like three tools that usually are in the couple minutes category that they can really use and they can feel it. And so if people can adopt those things, it's just a nice thing to have at the ready when you need it.
Do you see organizations doing more with their people to kind of train them up on breath work, or what do you see happening within organizations that they're trying to deal with mental health issues and trying to support their people? What could we be doing more within the organizational space?
I don't want to say out for all like HR professionals if they're listening, or heads of companies. I think everyone is doing the best they can. I want to say like everyone knows it's important. But I do think it's hard if it's kind of put on HR to kind of figure it out, right? I think that's a lot to ask. And I think what I've seen where companies that are doing what I feel like is a pretty good job is it really starts in the top, CEO, founders, leadership team, upper management, and it kind of permeates and trickles down the organization. If it's just put on HR, I think sometimes it's harder for it to have that impact. So I do like to see like when upper management, everyone's fully involved and making it a priority, and kind of everyone else is like, oh, this is, let's do this. Other successful things I've seen is when it's a team element, even simply as, we're gonna do a steps challenge this month. Everyone's got their cell phone and they can manage steps, but small teams just tracking their steps, amazing for your mental health, right? And that team element, I think, is such a strong component versus, it's great to give employees like gym memberships or discounts, but it's a very siloed thing. I think the team element goes a really long way. Other things I've seen successful, I like to say like a healthy forcing function where, every couple of years when we have to do our like sexual harassment training through HR, and it's like a 2 or 3 hour course you have to go through. It's like, could that be something around mindfulness and meditation and other ways to kind of manage your state? I could think that could be really impactful. And like I said, forcing people in a way. And then the last one, I've seen companies do a good job with like offering therapy, but I still think there's a resistance to the context of therapy. So I've had a really big push of talking to people like, can you do coaching instead in business coaching? Because I think maybe there might be a higher adoption rate amongst employees. Like, oh, I get my own business coach I can meet with. And in my experience, like business coaching, a lot of it is, in a mix as therapy because work life and personal life is all intertwined. And business coaches, I think, do a good job of tapping into that side as well. So those are three or four things that come to mind.
Yeah, certainly the good business coaches and executive coaches, I think there's a healthy component of that. That's always
100%.
there when you're having those types of conversations because everyone's lives are intertwined and everyone brings baggage from their own personal stuff into the workplace and vice versa, right? So yeah, coaching, absolutely. And I like how you also talked about trying to find ways to build it into structured, trainings and wellness challenges and like other things where people can mutually reinforce and support each other in what they're trying to do. It does start from the top. You do have to have commitment. So you can have this big initiative roll out through HR, which often, where they get rolled out from. And that's fine. HR can help to facilitate it and everything. But unless people see their leaders doing the basic things like taking their lunch breaks, going on vacation, not sending emails on Saturday nights, like there's like basic modeling behavior that needs to happen that a lot of times senior leaders and executives don't model very well. And so you can have whatever HR program and wellness program you're going to have, but if people see what your actual behavior is and it's inconsistent, what are they going to do most likely? They're probably going to end up lining up with what the behavior is. And so systematizing it, structuring it, having it become part of training and seeing the example of your people, of your leaders for their people, that's going to be powerful. It needs to be brought up, repeatedly. So if if a CEO or a senior executive is meeting with their team and they have an opportunity to reinforce, the value of self-care and taking time to recharge your battery and et cetera, like all those things, if that becomes part of the dialogue, the normal conversation that's happening, then you're giving permission to other people to also address those issues as well. And when you don't bring them up, you may feel like you're just being that strong leader that everyone can now look to and lean on. I think that's kind of an old school mentality around leadership. I don't think that's the kind of leader that most people really want nowadays. We want someone who shows some appropriate vulnerability, someone who we can relate to, someone who has empathy for what we're struggling with. And so modeling it accomplishes all those things. It helps you connect better with your people. And not only will you be able to address your issues, because leaders have burnout, leaders have anxiety, leaders have stress, but it'll help your team to be able to do the same.
I couldn't agree more. Giving permission and the vulnerability are two of my big things. Very much agree.
Yeah, excellent. And I wanted to bring this up because I thought it was a good example. I was just rewatching Ted Lasso with my wife. I don't know if you're familiar with the show.
Oh, My wife and I are very sad. It's not here. It's over. It was the ultimate feel good. If your listeners, if you haven't watched it, please go do yourself a favor. You will feel good after watching that
It
show.
is a superb show. Lots of leadership lessons, lots of feel good, lots of just interpersonal dynamics, all that. Great, great show. I had watched it before, my wife hadn't, so I rewatched it with her, and I was just struck again at how much time and effort and emphasis they put in that show towards mental health issues. So Ted, who the show is named after, the coach, has anxiety and he has panic attacks. But there's a bunch of other kind of related issues in it. And throughout the three seasons of the show, it comes up again and again and again. And there's therapy and there's all these different things. It's normalizing all of these practices. Sometimes like a Ted Lasso type character, so someone like that who's just always positive, always happy. Everyone loves this person. Everyone likes to work with this person. That's great. But the reality is nobody's happy all the time. Nobody's always doing well. People have their ups and downs, their good days, their bad days. Everyone's dealing with stuff in their lives. So like the character of Ted Lasso, on the front of it, he's like super positive, always happy, always supportive of the people around him. But personally, he has all of his own stuff going on, right? That he's trying to deal with. And that's the reality for all of us. We're all dealing with that. So I love that aspect of the show, that it just gives us all permission to acknowledge it, to lean into it, to get the help that we need so that we can be proactive and healthy and respond to the challenges that we're facing. Wouldn't it be amazing if every organization had a Ted Lasso type leader who, not
Yes.
only from the rah-rah standpoint, the great motivational speeches, all that kind of stuff, but just from the standpoint of like, we're going to be straightforward and honest with each other about the challenges that we face, and we're going to come together to face them in a positive way. That would be incredible if we could have organizations where leaders leaned into that.
100% agree, and you can see in that show, he lets his guard down to the fullest extent when he's coaching and leading, and that gives everyone else permission on the team to do the same. And when that happens, the fostering of open communication and teamwork, yeah, it's just it amplifies, right? And so it's just when you lead with that example, the team's gonna follow. So I love that you brought that up, and it makes me want to rewatch the show because it was so good.
It's one I imagine I'll probably rewatch every couple years because it's just fun. Okay, I wanted to talk to you probably for the rest of the time. We can explore this together. You talk about this idea of the Champagne Tower. Can you unpack that for us, explain what that is, and how that relates to mindfulness and wellness, starting from the top?
It's the number one, the very, very first thing I bring up when I work with anyone, whether companies or one-on-one. And because a lot of people I work with are business owners, entrepreneurs, where we tend to put ourselves last on our, to-do list, right? And I like to flip that on its head, meaning you are the top glass in your champagne tower. And when you choose to fill up your own cup first, it's going to overflow and flow into the cups closest to you in your life, the people. Their cups are going to fill up and has this positive cascading effect in society by you choosing to do so. And you're not being selfish and you're just choosing self-care. And it's just removing, trying to remove any guilt, any shame of like feeling like, oh, I'm not spending time with my family or whatever. It's like, no. You got to put yourself first. And when you do so, you're going to show up as the best version of you, at work, with your family, with your friends. And like I said, that's different for everyone. It's not just like, oh, mindfulness is the only thing. It's like, hey, maybe it's going for a walk. Maybe it's reading a book. Maybe it is watching a Ted Lasso or a show. Just making sure to prioritize the time. Whatever is going to fill you up is just paramount. And not letting that fall off the wayside and go to the bottom of your to-do list. It has to be at the top. And I like to use the same analogy with an organization. Hey, you can feel it when the CEO, the leadership team, their cups are filled. That trickles down to their direct reports. That trickles down to their direct reports, right? So that's where the champagne tower analogy comes from.
And I can share with the audience. I think I've said this before on other episodes, but that is something I definitely struggle with. I always have. I come from an upbringing where self-sacrifice was, probably the most important character trait that was instilled in me as a kid. And there's a lot of positives for that. I think being other oriented, other focused, and serving others around you, super, super powerful. And I like that that feeds into how I connect with and interact with people today and with my team and whatnot. But one thing I've had to try to learn, and I'm still not great at it, is there you have to have balance in all things. And so if you're constantly trying to endlessly serve and help others and always putting yourself second place or third or fourth or fifth place, you're never addressing your needs. Eventually, you just don't show up well enough for your people. And as an adult, I married, have six children. I'm a professor, so I have lots of students. I'm a department chair, so I have lots of faculty that I'm coaching and mentoring. Like I have all these different spheres of responsibility and different people that are leaning on me and counting on me to be my best self. And I've learned over time, like my capacity expands dramatically to be the best I can be for others and to help them better when I take the time, when I
Exactly.
exercise, when I walk my dogs, when I take time to meditate, etc. Like it, and it doesn't take tons of time, but I just need to like make sure I carve out small amounts of time every day consistently, and I'm just in a much better headspace to be able to be there and be supportive of those around me. And that's a hard lesson for a lot of people to learn. It certainly has been a hard lesson for me because I constantly feel the guilt. I feel it less now, but I still feel it, because I'm like, I'm choosing to do this instead of spending, another half hour with my kids. Instead I'm walking my dogs, or I'm doing this instead of spending that time with my wife or with my students or, whatever, all the different people that rely on me in some way. But if I can have some healthy boundaries, take care of myself, that means the time I am with my kids, I'm actually with my kids. I'm actually spending more quality time with my kids or with my wife or with my students. And I can just show up better for them. And yeah, I don't know like a quick, easy way to get past the guilt, factor, but it is
I know
something we have to wrestle
it's
with, right?
a trying to reframe it, and like you said, just thinking of like, oh, I have to be there for X, Y, and Z. Well, do you want to show up as a 60% version of you, or do you want to show up as 100% or 90%, so that the impact you have, you're actually there with your kids, versus, you're just running on empty. This conversation came up over the weekend. We were with a group of friends celebrating a birthday, and one of the moms was like, well, I just don't have time. I don't have time. And I hear that a lot, and I get it. We're stretched thin. And my one small strategy with that is like, all right, can you wake up 10 minutes earlier? Whatever time the alarm goes off, can you get 10 minutes before and give yourself some you time and try some mindfulness, try just a little bit of basic breathing. And they're like, oh, well, the excuses might think start rolling in, like, oh, I gotta get my sleep. Well, typically what I've seen, that 10 minutes, the fuel and the what it does for your mindset and your brain, like it's the same as getting sleep or better, in my opinion, if you can get that 10 minutes in. So you can start small, but that's kind of where I try to like fit it in. It's like, hey, just 10 minutes before you wake up currently, can you make that happen? So that's my throwing it out there.
And just fitting it in small little chunks throughout your day. It doesn't need to be a half hour chunk. It can literally be, listening to that song that gets you going and energizing you or helping you reframe things. It can be some breath work. It can be, just a short 5 minute stretch break walk, around your building, which we should be doing anyways, by the way. Like it can be a lot of those very simple little things that if we just do them consistently throughout, it'll make all the difference in the world. So you don't just feel like you're in a rat race, on the proverbial hamster wheel, running and putting out fires constantly, but you're actually taking the time to be centered. That will allow you to approach things more proactively. And over time, I found that there's fewer and fewer fires to put out. There's still fires, and sometimes th things pop up. But if you're in constant firefighter mode, like where that's how you show up with your team is just responding to emergencies every day. Most of those are of your making or could be removed if you just have small amounts of time that you can take to be a little bit more proactive in addressing things in a positive manner in advance. And then those fires don't even come up. So all of that to just say, to reinforce what you're saying, like start simple, build in basic things that you can do to just be in a better headspace, to be interact better with those around you. It's the, you know, the old put on your oxygen mask first, you know, in the aircraft, if you're having turbulence or whatever, take care of yourself. That allows you to then to take care of those around you. Let's not be shy about mental health issues. Let's get rid of the stigma around it. Mental health is just like physical health. We all go for regular checkups. We all take medications for various health issues. We track and monitor things related to our physical health all the time. Why can't we do that with our mental health? We should be doing that with our mental health. It's literally the same thing, yet we still have this, you know, societal norms and stigmas around it that probably could be shifted a bit. So let's be proactive and model that for our teams and be on the forefront of helping that to happen.
Very much agree with that.
Carson, it has just been a pleasure. I encourage the audience to reach out, to get connected. Before we wrap up, can you just share with us how people can get connected with you, find out more about your work, and then give us a final word on the topic for today.
Best way to find me, if you go to createmeditation.com or you just Google create meditation, it will come up. There you can book a free exploratory call with me if any of this is interesting. You can connect with me on LinkedIn as well. I think those are the two best ways. In regards to leaving kind of a final thought, it's just see if today you can focus on your breath for a couple minutes. Don't even worry about techniques or am I doing it right? Just focus on it because what it's doing, it's helping you come. I'd like to say that the breath is the gateway to the present moment, right? And it's one of the few things we do unconsciously and can do consciously. And so in doing so, not to go too down into, but that dialogue between the conscious and subconscious is extremely powerful. And so you can tap into that with the breath. So just notice the breath a little more today. I think it will pay dividends.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Carson. It's been a real pleasure. Again, I encourage the audience to reach out, get connected, find out more about what Carson could do for you. And as always, I hope everyone can stay healthy and safe, that you can find meaning and purpose at work each and every day. And I hope you all have a great week. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the podcast. We hope you stay healthy and safe, and please join us again soon.